MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by BetQL. BetQL is your home for the info you need to make yourself a smarter better. NBA, college basketball, and the NHL, they've got you covered. Just go to BetQL.com, promo code SGP30. That's BetQL.com, promo code SGP30 for 30% off. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is the home for the avid sports bettors, providing insights, analysis, and free betting picks. Better Than Vegas, it's like YouTube for sports betting. Make sure to subscribe to our page so you don't miss a pick at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And finally, we're also brought to you by Better Edge. Better Edge is like a stock exchange for sports bets, allowing you to buy and sell betting positions like a stock market. The best part is it allows you to bet with no VIG. That's right, no VIG betting that's legal in 40 states. Sign up at BetterEdge.com, promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. That's BetterEdge.com, promo code SGP.
Thank you for coming to the podcast. The MMA Gambling Podcast, the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Damn mediocre boys are back. I don't even know if we can if we can call ourselves mediocre at this point. We may have been downgraded to middling, perhaps. I think middling's worse than mediocre. But anyhow, I'm Jeff Fox, one of those mediocre boys. I am your host, episode 17. Our little baby's growing up. It's 17 already. I also am an editor and writer at sportsgamblingpodcast.com, and I run MMA-manifesto.com. Make sure you check out all those sites. And yes, I'm only one half of the mediocre boys. I have a partner in crime here. He hosts Top Turtle MMA podcast, and he also hosts Prelim Picker podcast. He's just as mediocre as I am. Some people refer to him as the Hillbilly Beaver. others refer to him as Gumby. We'll call him Daniel Vreeland for our purposes here. Hello, Daniel.
Hey, what's up, man?
Not much. Our picks aren't up, that's for sure. They're down from – we had a decent week 2 weeks ago. Then this week we both pulled a 4-for-8.
Yeah, not a great 4-for-8, but again, and I'm saying this to our listeners every week, if you want to turn this podcast off halfway through, just remember Our prelims continue to win you money, because I was looking, you know, pretty damn good before it kicked over to the main card. I was, granted, only 3-for-3, but a profitable 3-for-3.
Right, and you started it off with you got 2 right off the bat, Sergey Spivak, and then you got the +170 sweet plus money pick with Ayman Zahabi. So these things started off hot for you right at the gate.
And once again, you've underestimated a Canadian, probably for like the, you know, 17 shows in. I'm pretty sure you've underestimated a Canadian half a dozen times.
Yeah, well, that's one pick I don't mind whiffing on. If a Canadian wins and I didn't pick him, that's fine. I can live with that one. Probably unwittingly on his behalf, he retweeted my picks column from last week where I picked him to lose and sent it out to all his followers. So he obviously didn't read beforehand before he sent that out to his followers. But I was wrong, so the joke's on me anyhow. In the end.
Yeah, and he looked great doing it too. You know, like, I think when we broke it down, I said, you know, like, part of me still wants to believe it's the same Ayman Zahabi who won his debut 3.5 years ago, and 3 years ago was beating Ricardo Ramos pretty badly before he took a spinning elbow. I wanted to believe that Ayman Zahabi still existed in there, and especially being, you know, long layoffs scare everybody, but when you're the little brother of one of the greatest trainers of all time, you got a little bit more faith in what was happening in the off time. But I was hoping that same version was there, and it not only was that same version that's there, I'd say a better version was there.
Yeah, he looked very good. He definitely looked very good. The prelims, of course, we're speaking of last week's UFC Fight Night Blades versus Lewis, a.k.a. UFC Vegas 19. I think people also call it UFC Fight Night, I don't know, 187 or something ridiculous like that. But regardless, that's what we are speaking of. Prelims were pretty hot stuff. All finishes except for the main event of the prelims.
Yeah, and that one was a good fight too. I would say, right. You know, they wound up not giving away a bonus for Fight of the Night. And I would say if I was going to give a Fight of the Night, it was down to that or Derek Minner versus Charles Rosa. That Jared Gordon, Danny Chavez fight at that top of the prelims was really fun to watch. And actually, you know, I know some people probably get a little bit bored with the Jared Gordon grappling, but I think some of the things he was doing on the ground were just so impressive against a guy as physically strong and who showed really good takedown defense in his debut in Danny Chavez.
Right. Yeah. You sold me on the merits of Danny Chavez, and you sold me a
broken dream.
a broken dream. You sold me a yeah. I'm not sure what I'm going for here because I'm tired as per usual. But yeah, you he didn't. I guess he looked fine, but he didn't get the win over Jared Gordon, who isn't exactly top of the line in the UFC at this point, at least.
No, and it's worth noting too that he does get a little bit of Jared Gordon's purse for Gordon missing weight. That was
right,
a whole
yeah.
catastrophe. There were so many weight misses. Drago Rodriguez came in chubby, you know, Jared Gordon came in big, Ketlin Vieta came in big, and then freaking another one of our picks, which we don't even get to talk about because he never fought and probably never will fight in the UFC as far as I'm concerned. Rafael Alves came in heavy for lightweight in a featherweight
fight. Yeah, he came in 11.5 pounds overweight. He was, what, 157.5? Is that right?
157.5 for the 145-pound
right.
weight limit. Plus, you know, you get a pound out allowance for a non-title fight. But, yeah, so 11.5 pounds, and that's given the extra pound. If it was,
right.
you know, like title fight type stuff, he'd actually have been 12.5 pounds over the limit.
Yeah, that's one of the This is another lame excuse because every week we have to come up with excuses why we whiff on things. But one of the detriments of doing this podcast before the actual due weigh-ins is we don't get to see who misses weight because fighters who miss weight have only won, what, 30? I'm looking at my stats here, 34% of the time since the starting of 2020. So it's quite a detriment to miss weight. And quite a few fighters missed weight, as Dan said, this past week. And we had, I think I might have had all of them picked. So I had Draco picked also. So that's the reason why I whiffed on so many picks, is I didn't know these people were going to be fat when weigh-in time rolled around.
I don't think I would have changed my – so I already had Zahabi, so he was the one who didn't miss weight. And I already had Danny Chavez, who was, again, the one who didn't miss weight. I do think I would have changed Ketlin Vieta, though, because she's already kind of large. She's already somebody who doesn't maybe have the greatest cardio in the whole world. So for her to be fighting somebody like Yana Kunitskaya, I thought she would dominate the grappling, and she did. However, the end of the second round, she looked really tired. That round kind of gotten stolen by Yana Kunitskaya. And then, you know, just getting it poured on right at the end there by Kunitskaya, too, wound up costing her. So, yeah, that one I definitely would have taken a second look at and definitely not felt good about Vieta's price tag at that. Whereas
right.
originally I was all about it.
Yeah, she was minus 275 when we recorded the podcast last week. Top of the card, the top three fights, all underdogs hit in all those fights, including Derek Lewis, who was the biggest underdog main event winner since, I think it said Bisping versus Luke Rockhold, which was quite a long time ago. But he was like +300, +400, somewhere in that range, I believe.
That's incredible. I didn't hear that stat, but that is incredible that there hasn't been a bigger underdog in the main event. I guess that's because you don't usually see big main event underdogs, but that's really impressive, and it also makes me feel better about not giving Derek Lewis a single chance.
Right. Yeah. We said with someone who punches as hard as, or at least I wrote this, I believe we said it also, anybody who punches as hard as he does, you know, there's always a shot. And he definitely hit Curtis Blades hard. Blades looked very wary of engaging with Lewis, probably for good reason. And he looked very wary of shooting takedowns, and that probably was for good reason also, because when he did shoot for one, he got himself knocked out.
Yeah. And it looked like, I guess I would just say, you know, the thing that got him caught against Francis Ngannou too, was like that he didn't mask his takedown attempt really well, you know, and Francis tagged him. And it almost seemed like the tentativeness with the hands made it easier for Derek Lewis to see the shot coming. You know, like even if Blades was just throwing a little bit more like blind volume, like soft jabs, not intended to do any damage, just racking up, you know, strike attempts, I think it would have masked his takedown attempts enough that Lewis wouldn't have just been able to perfectly time that one up. But I think his lack of, you know, you said it seemed almost like he was tentative striking, which he should be. But that, like, the level of which he was tentative, I think made it so easy for Lewis to time that up. And props to Lewis. He looked good in there.
Yeah, he looked as wild and reckless and sloppy as ever, with his legs splaying all over the place when he's throwing punches, and looking at the ground when he's throwing uppercuts. I would love for this man to be heavyweight champ someday. I don't know if he's ever going to even get a title shot.
He's had one already.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, but I mean one in the current climate we're in now, because we have a title fight coming up next month, and then apparently John Jones is jumping line as next in line for that, and who knows if Lewis will be in line after that. He may have lost a fight by that time. Who knows? But I would love to see him as UFC heavyweight champ.
It would certainly sell all kinds of pay-per-views if you put him versus John Jones for the belt. Man, oh my God, the press conferences alone would be wonderful.
Yeah, that would be fun times for sure. So we talked about Blades, we talked about Vieira. Kuniskaya looked great in that fight. Even grappling, she looked great, which was very impressive. And then Charles Rosa got out-grappled big time by Minner. Minner looked very, 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 very good in that fight, going up against a guy who we thought was a superior grappler to him.
That's actually two in a row where I felt that about Derek Minner. Yeah, Derek Minner I had as a, you know, inferior grappler when he beat TJ Laramie by guillotine. And I think maybe I wrote that off at the end of the day because, you know, it's a guillotine and sometimes guys just get caught in guillotines. But no, he looked like the real deal. And it's also funny, too, looking back, we've written off his grappling a little bit, and if you look, it's probably because his both his contender series loss and his debut were losses by submission, so you would expect, you know, maybe he's not all that great on the ground against high level competition, but man, was he fighting really high level competition in Herbert Burns and Grant Dawson. So now that we're seeing him, you know, just a step down from those guys, he's looking great.
Yep, most definitely. And the commentators were making a good point to put over his coach, James Krause, who seems to be pumping out a lot of quality talent out of Glory MMA as of late.
Yeah, that camp seems to just keep churning out guys and bringing people on to make them way better, because it's not just even developing the talent. Like, he brought in I was blown away with the difference in Gina Mazzani after she went down to flyweight, which was, I think, in part working with him and working with a nutritionalist. But, man, did she look good down a weight class, having worked with him for a few months. So, yeah, not enough can be said about what he's doing for people in the gym as a coach, and all while still keeping his career going.
Yep, no doubt. Then your boyfriend got submitted, Andre Arlovsky. Got busted up pretty bad too by Tom Aspinall, but he didn't look any worse for wear than he has in any of his past fights, and I still think he's got plenty of gas in the tank. It wasn't an ugly loss by any means.
No, and I, you know, I had mentioned one of the reasons I was picking him was not only the value there at, you know, negative, you know, plus 220 or 250 or wherever you were getting him at, but also because, like, I was worried about how Aspinall would look in the second and third round. And to be fair, I think Aspinall was also worried about how he was going to look in the second round. That's why we saw that monster shot and him jump right on the back. And props to him for being able to take it and being able to put the submission in right away. And for his, you know, damn, his choking looked so tight for Arlovsky to have tapped that quick. But like, you know, he went out looking to grapple in the second round, clearly for a reason. He wasn't really confident he could put Arlovsky away on the feet anymore, and he had poured it on Arlovsky in the first. So, yeah, I think the read was right on that one, but ultimately Aspinall had an answer for it.
So of the two up-and-coming heavyweights who I'll exclude Spivak, because I don't think he's really an up-and-comer at this point, at least. Who are you liking better out of Daukaus and Chris Daukaus? And is it Chris Daukaus?
It's Chris Daukaus. Yeah, right. Kyle is his younger brother. Right. He's 185. Yes. Chris, the older brother.
Chris or Aspinall, yeah.
Yeah, I think I like Aspinall better as a prospect, mostly because, and I don't mean to be this disparaging towards Chris Daukaus, because I do like him a great deal as well, but I just don't know what the ceiling is for somebody with the physical attributes of Chris Daukaus. Because not that he's not very talented. He showed he was able to get out of the grasp of Alexi Olynyk and back up. And, man, did he pour it on him too, and was able to get the finish. You know, we've seen him knock out Parker Porter, which is incredible. I just worry about a guy who is not very, he's not very physically strong for a heavyweight, right? Like, he is not, he doesn't look like Francis Ngannou. He doesn't look like Curtis Blaydes. He doesn't look like Stipe Miocic. Like, he's a lighter guy for the division, and not a lighter guy in, a super fit, can go 25 minutes type way. And maybe he can go 25 minutes. I don't know. But, I just worry about a guy who's not super physically strong in a division of guys who are all crazy. I mean, there are guys built like Tom Aspinall, right? Tom Aspinall looks like a linebacker in the NFL. So, Chris Daukaus doesn't look like a linebacker in the NFL. And that's not saying he can't be successful there. But if you look at the top 15, and he'll be in the top 15 – I dare you to find anybody else who looks like he does. So it just gives me a little hesitation in talking about whether or not, he's a future title challenger or not. There's just not a lot of guys who have been successful in this era of fighting at heavyweight that look like Chris Daukaus. So I'm worried a little bit about that.
So to sum it up, hashtag chunky guy.
Yeah, he's a hashtag chunky guy.
Yeah, and not for nothing, he's also, I believe, full-time Philadelphia police officer also. So it's not like he's both feet are in the fight game. It sounds like he wants to become a full-time fighter, but at this point, that's not the case with him. So you can't put that past either. You know, he won a $50,000 bonus last week, so that might help him in his goal to become an actual full-time fighter. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
It doesn't seem to stop the champ, though, because the champ is also a full-time firefighter in addition to being a fighter. So I suppose there is a path there. And I just looked it up, too, by the way. His weigh-in for this past fight was 234 pounds. So, he's 30 pounds lighter than somebody like Francis Ngannou, and, not just 30 pounds of muscle, probably 50 pounds of muscle. So... once again, kind of alarming for that division.
So he basically is a light heavyweight that's not in shape. He could probably cut the 205.
I mean, it would be extreme. It would probably take more than just a cut, right? It's probably not he could cut to that weight, but he could, if he dieted well and got super in shape, right? Whereas in order for Tom Aspinall to make light heavyweight, he'd have to lose his left leg.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. So anyhow, it was a fun night for heavyweights. Before we move off it, heading back to the main event, what do you see next for Derek Lewis, or what would you like to see next for him?
So I think the answer kind of for both guys is 100% contingent upon what happens this weekend coming up between the fight where we will be talking about later on, Yair Rozenstruik versus Ciryl Gane. I just think the most sense right now is a little mini contender tournament with Lewis Blaydes, Rozenstruik gone, and just let the winners fight and the losers fight. Because what's going to happen is Ngannou fights Stipe. I mean, if by some miracle Ngannou wins that fight, which I think is a real possibility, he's going to fight Jones, and then most likely he's going to fight Stipe again. So these other guys can't just wait for whatever is going to happen between those three to shake out. I mean, best case scenario for somebody like Derek Lewis, Stipe wins again, so that way Ngannou isn't, looking, they're not looking for that trilogy. Then he fights John Jones, and then you get the winner of that. But in order to get the winner of that, I imagine one of these two guys who are about to fight this weekend are going to come away looking impressive as well. So you're going to have to fight one of those two probably in order to make sure that you're next in that queue.
Yep. It makes sense to me. And it seems most all the guys involved realize their fate also, and they realize that a title shot is nowhere in sight, really. Realistically, it's going to be years away. So especially if Miocic keeps a belt, because he likes to take lots of time off, because like Dan said, he's a firefighter also. So anyhow, heavyweight's interesting though. That's to say the least. So put a bow on that. A 4-8 week for us. Dan lost a little less money than I lost. Overall for the year, I'm 28-37, which is horrifically like 43%. And Dan's like even worse than that. He's 22-43. But this week is all going to change, right, Dan?
That's right. We're going to change it. This is the profitable week.
Okay. Before we go into this week, let's tell you about one of our sponsors here. Let's tell you about BetQL. I want to get an advantage over the sportsbook when it comes to betting. Then you need to download BetQL, the only app you'll need to make smart bets. BetQL has sharp data for college basketball, NBA, and the NHL. So if you want an inside edge for who the props are backing, you need to check out BetQL. Also, I was just on there this morning. They also have futures and stuff for NFL on there. So you can check that out also if football's more your sport. Plus, they have tons of sportsbook offers for your state. So head to the App Store or Google Play Store and download BetQL. And when you're there, of course, enter the code SGP30 for 30% off your first subscription. So promo code SGP30 at betql.com. All right, up to this week, the UFC train continues to roll on, of course. No rest for the wicked. We've got UFC Fight Night, Rozenstruik versus Gone, which would be UFC Vegas 20. Also known as UFC Fight Night 186, also known as UFC and ESPN Plus 44. So pick what you like there. It's February 27th, UFC Apex in Las Vegas, where they are holding shows for the time being until they are allowed to move around the states again, or until they head back to Fight Island. Who knows? Just going to check the start times. I believe both sets of the cards. Yeah, ESPN Plus for the prelims, ESPN Plus for the main card also. If you're in the States, if you're in Canada, it'll be on TSN 5, even though this weekend I turned TSN 5 on and they have golf on for all the prelims and for part of the main card, they have golf on. So, thank you TSN for that. So everyone missed our native son, Ayman Zahabi, win. There is a Canadian this week. I forgot. I just saw her name. Anyhow, I was thinking, am I going to go against Canadian again? And I just saw Alexis Davis's name. So, I get sidetracked easily here. A main card, 5 p.m. And then the prelims, 5 p.m., main card, 8 p.m. So basically same as this week, which works well. Doesn't end too late. And allows me to get my MMA-manifesto stuff out at a reasonable hour of the night / early morning. So as per usual, we will start with the prelims. They're up to like the fight last week's fight card. They were still announcing fights for this card. So at this point, we've got 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13. So they may add more. 13, usually cards are anywhere between what, 12 and 15. So could be adding more, but at this point, we're going to break down what, like I said, 13 fights. Let's start with a short notice one that was just added. It's going to be a catchweight 140 pound bout. Raoni Barcelos versus a newcomer, Marcelo Rojo. Or Rojo, I'm assuming it's Rojo probably, because he's probably Brazilian, I'm guessing.
Argentina.
Dan probably. Argentina. I was going to say Dan knows. So it's probably Rojo anyhow, is it not?
It is Rojo, yes, correct.
All right, there we go. Let's break him down first. 16-6 as a pro, half of those wins via knockout, so 8 knockouts, 6 submissions. So he is a finisher. One thing of note, he has lost four of his 6 defeats are via submission. He's won 3 of his last 4, but he hasn't fought since September of 2019. He will be an inch of reach advantage on Barcelos. He's a year younger, and this is his UFC debut, and this is short notice. This was just like announced last week, I believe. He's going up against a guy who's on a tear, Raoni Barcelos, 16-1 as a pro, 8 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's 5-0 in the UFC. He's won 9 straight fights. There's no betting line on this fight yet as of this recording. What do you think the line's going to be first, Dan?
If I had to guess, I'm going to say -350 for Barcelos. Like this is going to be ridiculously one-sided. We can get right into it. It should be ridiculously one-sided.
Yes.
Because like you said, Barcelos, 5-fight win streak, and it's not just a 5-fight win streak either, right? Because like you could say a 5-fight win streak, he's done that 5-fight win streak over guys like Chris Gutierrez, who since Chris Gutierrez has lost to Rayony Barcelos, he's 3-0 in the UFC. Or actually, I take that back. He's 4-0-1 since then. So he's been on a 5-fight, undefeated streak, because he did have that one draw to Cody Durden in there since he lost to Barcelos. And he also beat Sadner Magomedov, who's been good since then, and Khalid Taha. And they've had him booked against Cody Stamann, Mirab Tvalishvili, and this fight was supposed to be against Rafael Assuncao. So we're talking about a guy who they're very high on. He's very good. And in addition to that, he's the one with the full training camp here. And you mentioned, Rojo's got a bunch of knockouts. If you've watched highlights of him, because Combate has got all of their stuff on YouTube, so you can go watch pretty much all the old fights. First of all, he hasn't fought in 2.5 years. That's the first, whoop, that's an alarm. And second of all, if you watch that fight too, he's a little bit sloppy with his striking. He gets a little wild in there. And against a guy who's got great jiu-jitsu, great top pressure, and good submissions. You mentioned he's only got two, but his top game and submission game is pretty strong. I mean, I think he's just going to run through Rojo here and probably, he could submit him, he could ground and pound him out, but I expect a finish here, especially because the aforementioned, we didn't get into talking about John Castaneda from this past week's card who knocked out Eddie Wineland, but he submitted Rojo 3 years ago, which is only his second to last fight. There's no reason to pick against Barcelos here. If you don't like the big fat odds that are coming, like I said, probably around -350, you might want to stay away from betting them, but I actually think even there, you're probably finding value.
And I really enjoyed that alarm sound that you made during that. It was good. Can you do it again?
I did not hear an alarm sound in there.
You made an alarm sound. You said that just set off alarms, and you went whoop. I like it. That may have to be a new staple on the show. Dan making an alarm sound. You don't even realize you did it. It was so natural for you. Looking at his resume, he's fought good guys, and Combate is a very good promotion. So hopefully he sticks around. Hopefully they keep him around after he gets destroyed this weekend.
Yeah, I think he's a good signing. I think he probably was on their short list of guys who would be in this summer's contender series or something like that. And that's why he was all ready to go.
Yep. All right. Moving on, we'll go with light heavyweights next. This is this order of the fights are probably going to be scrambled up a bit once fight night comes. But as of now, this is what people are expecting the order to be. Light heavyweights. Dustin Jacoby, Maxim Grishin. Let's start with Grishin. 31-8-2 as a pro, 16 knockouts, 6 submissions. He's 1-1 in the UFC. Before the UFC, he had an impressive run in the PFL. He was 4-0-2 in them. He lost his UFC debut and then won his last fight. He's got 2 inches of reach on Jacoby. He's got the grappling advantage, and he, as of this recording, he's at +135 dog. Jacoby, 13-5 as a pro, 1 knockout, 9 submissions. He's been in the UFC a couple times. This is his second run in the UFC. He's 1-2 in the UFC. He went 0-2 his first run, and then he got re-signed and won his last fight. He also was 1-0 in the Dana White Contender Series. He's 0-2 in Bellator, 0-1 in World Series of Fighting, so he's had top-level experience for quite a while now. He's got 3 straight wins on his resume currently. He's 4 years younger. He's at -165. I have Jacoby with a question mark, so I'm not sure if I'm picking him or not. We'll see what Dan has to say first.
So the first thing I would say is if you look at those stats, like you mentioned, this is a good one to put in context here. So those stats do involve his first stint in the UFC, which it's worth mentioning was 9 years ago. He was 23 years old at the time he was in the UFC last. I barely count those fights and I barely count those stats. I think I like Jacoby here too, because he's just the more technical of the strikers. I don't really see Grishin being able to drag this into a grappling match. You know, he's shown some grappling, but also, like, you know, Jordan Johnson put him on his back a few times in PFL, that doesn't show a lot. Jordan Johnson's a great wrestler and was, you know, in the top 15 in the UFC before he got into some kind of contract dispute and wound up in PFL. So, like, I think Grishin is probably, you know, better than his 1-1 record, you know, would indicate. One of those was at heavyweight against Marcin Tybura, which is never a fun debut to have. So, like, I think both are probably here to stay for a little while, but I like Jacoby slightly better on the feet. I will say, when you're looking at the price tag and getting him at almost negative 200, right? You said negative 175.
165, yeah.
I don't think I like that price. I think this is probably a little closer to a pick'em, but I'm still going to take Jacoby here.
Okay, so we're both going with Jacoby then. You sold me on that. Let's move on. I don't know why I'm trailing your bets, but regardless, let's move on. Bantamweights, Vince Cachero, Ronnie Lawrence. Cachero's had one fight, but a couple of newbies here, so Dan can fill us in because he knows about all these guys, obviously. Always. He doesn't know if they're going to win or lose, but he knows about them at least. Cachero, 7-3 as a pro, 2 knockouts, 2 submissions. He lost his UFC debut. He's only won one fight out of his last 4, and he is a plus 140 dog. As for the debuting Ronnie Lawrence, he's coming in off the Dana White Contender Series, so he won his fight there to get him into the big show here. 6-1 as a pro. Half of those are via knockouts, so 3 knockouts. He's never been finished in a fight. He's won 3 straight. He's got 2 inches of height, 3 years younger. Small sample size, but grappling stats lean to him. He's at minus 170. I think I'm leaning to Lawrence, but I really don't know too much about him, so we'll see what you say about him first.
So at first glance, I was also leaning towards Lawrence, and then I went and watched some film. Lawrence did a phenomenal job in the Contender Series grounding Jose Johnson, you know, like pretty much whenever he wanted. But if you actually go back and look at Jose Johnson's record and Jose Johnson's last, you know, couple of losses, that's always been kind of the knock on Johnson, is that he can't out grapple somebody. You know, like Levi Molis beat him on in XKO, which is an organization I didn't know too much about. Same thing, rear naked choke, dragged him to the ground, beat him up there. Armando Villarreal, who had fought Draco Rodriguez on Contender Series, dragged him to the ground and sort of grounded him out in LFA. And people who will stand and punch with him get knocked out by him. But if you can get him down, like, he just doesn't get up very well. He, you know, puts in butterfly hooks and stuff like that. So ultimately, what I saw from Ronnie Lawrence on the Contender Series, while it really impressed Dana White for some reason, he gave him all kinds of accolades for that fight, I actually wasn't all that impressed with his performance. Especially, he didn't seem to be able to move past Jose Johnson's guard, or, you know, didn't get much done on the ground. I think Cachero here is probably better on the feet than Lawrence, too. He's a little bit more reckless. You know, he could get taken down in his debut. He took a short notice fight against Jamal Emmers, which hopefully he recovers, because that was another weird cancellation this past weekend with his back spasms. But I think Cachero has probably got the advantage on the feet here, and if he can just stop one or two of those takedowns, I think he's going to beat Lawrence on points here. And hey, you know, like you said, he's a tough guy to stop. He's never been stopped. But, you know, Cachero's got some hands too, so I wouldn't be surprised to see Cachero stun him or something like that too. So I'm going to go with Cachero here as an underdog pick early in the card.
Do I follow that or not? Looking at Cachero's record, he's only really lost the top guys. He's lost to, what, KC Kenny? He lost to Jamal Emmers. So, all right, let's do it, Dan. Let's do it. I need some underdogs anyhow. So let's both take him. We'll go with Cachero, and we'll both be wrong together. moving on to a couple guys I know a bit more about. Light heavyweights, William Knight, Alonzo Minifield. We will start with Knight. He is 9-1 as a pro, 8 of those wins coming via knockout, 1-0 in the UFC, 2-0 on the Dana White Contender Series. He's won 3 straight fights. He's a year younger. Striking and grappling stats are in his favor. This fight is currently pick'em. They're both at minus 115. As for Minifield, 9-2 as a pro, 8 knockouts, 1 submission, so all finishes for him. 2-2 in the UFC. He won his 2 to start off, and then dropped his last 2, and he got knocked out his last fight. Also, he also was 2-0 on Dana White Contender Series, and he's 3 and 0 in LFA, 1-0 in Bellator, so he's had a lot of top level experience. 2 inches taller, 3 inches of reach, -115. I think I'm going to take Knight in this one.
I'm going to differ with you on this one then. I'm going to take Menafield. My problem with Knight is, Knight is very sloppy. And at light heavyweight, that doesn't always get you caught, right? But look at his fight on the Contender Series with Cody Bundage. He wound up on the ground underneath him and then just kind of muscled up and just stood up and moved Cody and then just won with elbows. And it happened in 2.5 minutes, which is crazy. But you could say the same thing about some of those positions with Alexa Kamer, which he wound up winning that decision, but it wasn't really pretty. And both of those guys are the types that just muscle up and get out of position. So they were actually built for each other. But if you look back at guys who he's fought, who he could actually stop some of the things he did, Tifon Chukwi, who granted now is in the UFC as well, in his third professional fight, knocked William Knight cold, right? Busted him bad. And I just think Alonzo Menafield, granted, he did lose to Ovince St. Preux. He lost a tough decision to Devin Clark where he gassed out. I just think he's so much smarter when it comes to this. You're going to see him with a better gas tank as the fight goes on here. I also think he's just the type of person who is good enough to punish William Knight when he makes some of those inevitable mistakes. Sure, could he get caught before that? Absolutely. Could William Knight power out of a position and wind up punishing him? I think that's less likely than it is in all of William Knight's previous fights. So I'm going to go with Menafield here. And I think it's smart that this fight is a pick'em fight. They're light heavyweights we don't know too much about. But, Menafield's also got the Fortis MMA on his side, and that always, if it's a close one, that's always the edger for me.
Yep, no doubt. All right, before we see if I am a am a treasonist again and go against the Canadian, let's tell you about another sponsor, Betterland.Vegas. Betterland.Vegas, it's like YouTube, but for what hashtag the Gens only care about, which would be sports betting. Best part is you can get free video picks from the SGPN crew. You can also get picks I saw this week from our friends at Top Turtle MMA podcast. Dan and his co-host Shockwave Dave are making videos. Dan's not willing to do any extra work for this podcast here, but when it comes to Top Turtle, no, he'll do videos for sure, of course. So you can subscribe to them too, but make sure you also obviously subscribe to our channel here. So it would be sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV, and then you'll get all of our videos. Second we post them, you'll get MMA picks for me every week. Losing picks. I gave you 3 losing picks last week. Can't get better than that. And then you'll also get the college sports, NBA. We basically cover it all there. So go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV and subscribe to our Betterland.Vegas page. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. All right. Time to go against the Canadian. I think Dan's going to probably follow my lead here. Women's bantamweight fight. Sabina Mazo, Alexis Davis. The Canadian, Alexis Davis, 19-10 as a pro, which means she's been around forever to have that many fights as a female fighter. It takes a while because UFC didn't even have females for most of her career. So she's 19-10 as a pro, 2 knockouts, 8 submissions, 6-5 in the UFC. She's lost 3 straight fights, has not fought since July of 2019. She's +205 in this one. Mazo, 9-1 as a pro, 2 knockouts, 1 submission, 3-1 in the UFC. She dropped her debut. She's won 3 straight since then. Never been finished in a fight, so she lost via decision, and that was her only loss as a pro. Inch taller, 2 inches of reach, 13 years younger than Alexis Davis. Striking and grappling stats in her favor, -245, and she's the obvious pick for me here.
Yeah, I think she's the obvious pick too. And the biggest problem for me with Alexis Davis here is, right, if you had to say, what is Alexis Davis that makes you feel confident in her, you would say, if I feel confident about anything in Alexis Davis's game, it's her grappling. And she's gotten 3 of her last 11 takedowns in her last 4 fights. And like you said, that's including a long layoff. So and that's even lower than her already 33% takedown accuracy, which is bad, and it's really bad. And that's the thing I'm the most comfortable in her now. I will say, I am not sold on Sabino Mazo. I know everybody out there is like, they think Sabino Mazo is like the second coming. And I think, you know, like she was exciting because she came via LFA by head kicks. And everybody was like, oh, she's a killer. I think she's got some potential, but I think it's a long way to come, right? Like her first UFC win was against Shayna Dobson, and she just kind of out-grappled her. And for me, you know, we just saw Shayna Dobson can be out-grappled fairly easily. So I'm not completely sold on her, but I also think this is a bad matchup for Alexis Davis. I think she's not going to be able to get her down. And I think ultimately the technical striking and just sheer output too. It's worth noting, Sabina Mazo has landed over 100 punches three fights in a row. That's just way too much output for Alexis Davis to deal with.
Yeah, an aging grappler is not going to want that much coming at her, that many strikes coming at her. So we are both going with the youngster in this one, which brings us to, as of now, the main event of the prelims. I thought we were going to have Chaisson and Renault as the main event, but some guy named Daniel Vreeland, I see, wrote that it's that fight's been moved to March 20th. So.
Yeah, that one is off now. It was originally off because that was supposed to be earlier this month, too. That was originally off because Renault had COVID and now is off, at least according to Renault, due to a Macy Chaisson injury, which isn't too serious. And I guess they're going to fight in March.
Yeah, I don't know how reliable that Vreeland guy is anyhow, but we'll go with it regardless. So lightweight, Alexander Hernandez, Thiago Moises. Thiago Moises, 14-4 as a pro, 3 knockouts, 6 submissions, never been finished in a fight. 3-2 in the UFC, 1-0 on Dana White Contender Series. He's won his last 2 fights. He's 3 years younger than Hernandez. He's plus 160. Hernandez, 12-3 as a pro, 5 knockouts, 2 submissions, 4-2 in the UFC. He started off as a up and coming prospect in the UFC, but since then he's lost one fight. So it's back and forth for him over the last 4. He won via KO his last fight. 2 inches of reach, minus 195. What are your thoughts on this one?
I'm going to go with the dog here in Thiago Moises.
Me too.
Yeah, I love him in this fight. Yeah. I actually think those odds are real messed up and not necessarily even that. You know, like Hernandez shouldn't be a favorite, but he shouldn't be negative 200, right? Like he's got wins over Chris Grootsmacher, and which granted it was a knockout, but it's Chris Grootsmacher and Francisco Trinaldo, where both men threw a combined 50 punches in a 3-round fight. 50 punches were thrown in that fight. And for some reason, those are his only 2 wins in his last 4 fights. For some reason, he's coming into this fight as a massive favorite over Thiago Moises, who's on a little bit of a tear. And I will say the interesting thing to me here is that Thiago Moises took down Bobby Green twice, who's a pretty damn good grappler in his own right. And in addition to that, didn't look awful on the feet against Bobby Green either. You know, when he had a little trouble with Michael Johnson in the fight before that, he just, you know, he pulled back and ripped an ankle lock. I think eventually it was a weird Achilles lock that he turned over. So, like, I mean, granted, yes, Alexander Hernandez has the advantage on the feet here. All fights start on the feet, all that kind of good stuff. But I will just say, like, I think the likelihood of Moises hanging with him on the feet enough to get him to the ground is good. And Moises is a beast on the mat. So, yeah, I like Moises here. I also would probably be interested just to like add a little bit to a bet. If you were already planning on betting on Moises, might be worth looking up what Moises by submission is too, because it's totally possible that he catches a sub here. And if he does, I mean, at plus 170 for him to win period, we're probably looking at plus, you know, 300 for him to win by sub or more. So definitely look into that if you're already considering picking him.
That is, yeah, that's some sweet plus money there. And yeah, he did submit Michael Johnson. His last 2 wins, Michael Johnson and Bobby Green. So that's very, very impressive for the youngster. He went the distance with Benil Dariush also and Demir Ismailagulov. So it's his only losses basically are to those two guys. So very solid resume. Yeah, but we both like him as the live dog here. Before we hit you with our commercial-free main card, which is one of our staples here, which I just made up a few weeks ago, let's tell you about our last sponsor, Better Edge. It's BETTOR, Better Edge. It's a stock exchange for sports bets. which allows you to buy and sell betting positions like a stock market. Best part is it allows you to bet with no VIG. Since you're buying positions from other sports bettors, there's no house. You can play for money in 40 states. It's sports betting without a VIG. You literally can't beat it. So sign up today at betteredge.com and use promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. So it's betteredge.com, promo code SGP. All right, main card, featherweight fight. Alex Caceres, Bruce Leroy versus Kevin Kroom, who is the hard-hitting hillbilly. Any relation to you, Dan, since you're a hillbilly beaver and he's a hard-hitting hillbilly?
He is not related to me, but I will tell you that when I was covering a local card at like a sketchy casino in Rhode Island, maybe it's not sketchy, Twin River is a little bit of a seedier casino, he main evented against Matt Bassett one time
Really?
In a losing effort, I will add.
And what website would you have been covering that event?
I believe covered that for MMA-manifesto.com. Make sure you go there for all of the coverage.
I've heard of that. And it's probably no surprise that Kroom got busted for weed and for his last fight also and had his submission win overturned. So wouldn't expect anything less from a hard-hitting hillbilly. Let's tell you a bit about him first. He is a veteran. He might be new to the UFC, but he is a veteran. 21-12. 0-1 is his record as a pro. 6 knockouts, 10 submissions. Like I said, the one on his record is a no contest from his last fight, which he actually won via submission, but then he tested positive for marijuana. I don't know how that made him a better fighter, but that's the rules at this point. So that win's been stricken from his record. He also fought in Bellator where he was 1-1. He's an inch taller than Caceres, and with Caceres' afro, he's probably not taller at all. Caceres still has the afro, right? He didn't cut it, did he?
I don't think so. Sometimes it's really short, though.
Right. Okay. So regardless, I think Caceres is going to be taller come fight night with the hair. So Kroom, +195. Bruce Leroy, he's been around forever in the UFC. 17-12-0-1. 3 knockouts, 6 submissions. 7 of his losses are via submission, though, so that is something to keep an eye on here. With he's fighting against a guy who is a submission wizard of sorts. He is 12-10-0-1 in the UFC, so majority of his fights have been in the UFC after fighting in the Ultimate Fighter house. He's won his last 3 fights. He won via submission his last fight. He is a year younger than Kroom, despite being in the UFC for so long. He's at -235. I'm leaning towards him, but that number is kind of steep for a fight I could see him getting subbed in.
Yeah, I would say I could see him getting subbed in too, but the one thing I will say about Alex Caceres is that he does a good job of keeping space, right? Like he is a great distance fighter. His footwork has just gotten better and better the more and more he fights. And like in his last couple of fights, he fought guys who probably wanted to grapple him too, in Chase Hooper and Austin Springer. And like he looked better in those grappling exchanges. The really only, you know, you mentioned he's got some submission losses on his record. One is to Kron Gracie. Like you can't really count that as being like, oh, he's weak against submissions. He got submitted by Kron Gracie, who's one, you know, of the great jiu-jitsu guys in the UFC. And then the one to Jason Knight, which happened all the way back in January of 2017. So we're talking about 4 years old since his you know, second to last submission loss. And you know, one of the other ones is to Uriah Faber. So like, yes, are we talking about a guy who's got some submission losses? True, but they are definitely easy to overlook. And I also just don't think Kroom's wrestling and his entries into his wrestling are good enough to get Caceres down here. I think this fight is going to look a lot like Chase Hooper versus Caceres, only with like a more reckless puncher on the other end of Caceres picking him apart. You know, Hooper was kind of conservative and didn't get too crazy. Kroom's going to get crazy, and he's going to get stung a bunch of times for it. And Caceres is going to keep fighting smart, and people are going to get frustrated that he doesn't get lured into a Kevin Kroom-type fight. So I'm going to go with Caceres. I'm pretty comfortable with him. You know, maybe not necessarily at -235, but, like, I'm pretty comfortable that he's going to win this fight.
All right. There we go. Agreeing again. Welterweights, Randy Brown, Alex Oliveira. Oliveira, 22-9-1-2. 12 knockouts, 5 submissions to his record. He's been subbed 5 times. Another guy who gets tapped out quite a bit. 11-7-0-1 in the UFC. He's only won 2 of his last 6 fights. He got submitted in his last fight. He's a +135. For Brown, 12-4 as a pro, 6 knockouts, 4 submissions, 6-4 in the UFC. He got knocked out his last fight. He won his two fights before that, so he's won 2 out of the 3. 4 inches taller, 2 inches of reach, 2 years younger. Grappling stats in his favor, -165 for him. I am going in his favor also.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Randy Brown in this fight. I like Cowboy Oliveira, and I like him for reasons of how much his striking is probably going to look a little bit better than Randy Brown's here. I also think, too, the interesting thing here is Randy Brown usually has a pretty significant reach advantage against his opponents. And this will be one of the smaller reach advantages he has here. It's only 2 inches, which, you know, he's got a very long reach. He uses it fairly well. So, like, this will be one of the times where that gets tested. But ultimately, I think people sleep on the fact that Randy Brown is actually a pretty good wrestler here. And I think against a guy like Oliveira, who gives up a fair amount of takedowns, I think that that's a pretty easy path to victory for him here. I also think, too, just in general, you know, you mentioned Oliveira has only won 2 out of his last 6 fights. I actually think he lost one of those two, too. I had Max Griffin winning that fight against him. So really, I have him 1-5 in his last bunch of fights. And it's a decision win over Peter Sobota. So, you know, you consider that he got taken down by Nicholas Dalby. You consider, you know, Mike Perry beat him up pretty decently. And Gunnar Nelson took him down at will. I think Randy Brown, as long as he stays away from the big shot early, should be fine here.
But he did survive a grenade attack on Christmas Eve 2018. So that's a plus. That's a plus in his column, is it not?
I tend to not use that when breaking down fights. But hey, no. Nothing's been real successful so far this year. So maybe we should start considering that.
And he has 10 children. How about that?
Does he really have freaking 10 children?
That's what it says. It says he has 10 children. Jesus. And then I also see it says that his wife's pregnant. So who knows? Maybe he has 11 children by now, for all we know.
That's a lot of kids.
Yeah, so the grenade attack didn't wreck that part of his body, apparently. So that's good.
That's good for him, I guess.
All right, yes. moving on. This fight was just added. During last week's telecast, a women's, what did we talk about? Flyweight? No, strawweight. That's right. Strawweight fight. Angela Hill, Ashley Yoder. They fought once before back in July of 2017, which Dan and I both failed to realize. Originally, Hill won that fight via unanimous decision. Before I break it down, what do you think? There's no odds posted yet. What do you think the odds are going to be on this one?
I got to imagine not only is Hill a favorite because she won the original fight and has been fighting a higher level of competition since then, she's also a massive fan favorite. So if the bookies are coming in trying to make sure you get money on both sides of the line, I got to imagine her numbers are up there in the -230s to 250s. Not quite as high as Raoni Barcelos because she does have some recent losses. But if I had to guess, she's over -200 for sure.
Okay. All right. I'll break down Yoder first, who Dan is going to pick. 8-6 as a pro, 4 via submission. Hence the name Spider Monkey. She's never been finished in a fight, which is impressive. She's 3-5 in the UFC. A lot of those were very questionable decision losses, I do have to say. She has won 3 of her last 5, though, and she did win her last fight, which probably saved her job. 4 inches taller than Hill, 5 inches reach, 2 years younger, so all those are in her favor. Grappling stats also in her favor, hence Spider Monkey. As for Hill, 12-9 as a pro, 5 knockouts, 7-9 in the UFC. She's had a couple stints in the UFC. She's lost her last 2 fights, won 3 straight before then. She did get COVID in December, but that doesn't seem to be slowing anyone down in the UFC. Striking stats in her favor. And like I said, she won their original fight almost 4 years ago via unanimous decision. Dan, tell us why you're going to go with Yoder.
I'm actually not going to go with Yoder.
Oh, no!
Sorry to let you down. I do love Ashley Yoder. I will say she's one of my favorite women's strawweights to watch fight. I actually think she's so fun because she, like, you know, you mentioned the name of the Spider Monkey. She's just very daring in her grappling exchanges. I think she's kind of fun to watch on the feet. Her fight with Justine Kish way back when was, which is actually before the Angela Hill fight, was a really fun one to watch in the striking and grappling exchanges. So I love watching her. I just think here, you know, you watch her kind of overwhelm Miranda Granger in the grappling department last fight. I don't think she's going to do that to Angela Hill. I mean, I'd love for her to prove me wrong, especially if you're going to get her at plus 200. But for me here, I just think Angela Hill's physical gifts, her ability to put a fighter up against the cage, work away at them, and her ability to avoid a takedown, I think is just so important here. And she is the more polished striker. That's worth noting. She's definitely more polished than Ashley Yoder. I hope Ashley Yoder proves me wrong here. And I'm not rooting against Angela Hill because I hate Angela Hill. I love Angela Hill too. I hope Ashley Yoder proves me wrong because I enjoy watching her fight. And like you said, she was probably pretty close to the door, having lost a couple in a row and then beat Granger. So I'd like to see her stick around so we can see her learn more, because she's kind of learning on the job here. I just don't think this is the right matchup for her, especially on a week's notice.
That's right. Yep. This one was just added. So we're going to agree on that one. Bantamweights. This is a fight we've broke down a few weeks back. It seems like this one has been on the books forever, and it keeps getting erased and pushed down the line. It would be Pedro Munhoz, Jimmy Rivera. We'll go with Munhoz first. 18 pro wins, 5 knockouts, 8 submissions. Never been finished. Lost his last 2 fights. 3-3 over his last 6. 2 inches of height. He's at plus 110. He was my original choice, and I guess I'll have to stick with that. Rivera was Dan's original choice. He's at minus 140 right now. He's 23 wins, 4 knockouts, 2 submissions. Won 2 of his last 5, including his last fight. 3 inches of reach, 3 years younger, grappling stats in his favor. Are you still sticking with Rivera in this one?
I'm still sticking with Rivera, and we don't have to dive too much into this because, like I said, we've broken this fight down, I think, twice already. I'm going with Rivera because I just think, ultimately, Pedro Munhoz's advantage here is on the ground. He's a better grappler than Jimmy Rivera, clearly. Jimmy Rivera's takedown defense is elite. It's very good. He stuffed Piotr Jan twice out of the 3 attempts. So yeah, he did get taken down once by Piotr Jan, but he did stuff him the rest of the times. He stuffed Kobe Stamen 4 out of 5 times en route to a win there. He kept himself off the ground against Aljamain Sterling in 7 attempts. So really, I really believe that he's got the advantage on the feet here in terms of speed, in terms of his movement, and I think the fact that he's going to stay off the ground here keeps him safe. Munhoz, people are real big on because he had that big knockout over Cody Stamen, Cody Garbrandt. But like, I think that's recklessness, right? Like, that's why he had such a good time there. And I just don't think he's going to be able to put in that same kind of performance. And, you know, I had him beating Frankie Edgar, not for anything there, but I don't think Jimmy Rivera is going to get drawn into that same kind of firefight as Frankie Edgar did.
All right. We'll differ on that one, which is good. I need some dogs. Hopefully I hit on one here. Women's flyweights, Montana De La Rosa, Mayra Bueno Silva. Have we broken this one down before? No. Have they been scheduled before?
It feels like it has, but I think Montana De La Rosa was scheduled with a different Brazilian. I'm pretty sure she was scheduled with Talia Santos.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what we broke down. Okay. Let's go with the Brazilian, Silva, first. 7-1 as a pro, 1 knockout, 5 submissions. She's won 2 of her 3 fights in the UFC. Her only loss was to Marina Moroz, so no shame there. And she's got 2 submission wins, so both her wins in the UFC are via submission. Minus 120. De La Rosa is a slight favorite in this. No, sorry, slight dog in this one, minus 110. 11-6 as a pro, 8 knockouts, 4-2 in the UFC. Past 4 fights, she's alternated wins and losses. And she lost her last fight, so maybe we should pick her here. She's going to win. 2 inches of reach, 4 years younger. I'm going to go against that anyhow, and I'm going to pick Silva in this one at minus 120.
I'm going to take the dog in De La Rosa here.
All right.
I think she's a solid dog pick here for a couple of reasons. Number one, you mentioned she's alternated wins and losses. Those losses are to Vivian Araújo and Andrea Lee, who are both like top 10. I think Andrea Lee's down to like 11 or 12 right now. But like, they're both basically top 10 flyweights. So she's losing to like the very top tier of the division, where you're talking about Mayra Bueno Silva, who lost to Marina Moraes, who's not even in the rankings, and largely by being taken down and Moraes just being safe. And I think that's the difference here, is that the first of all, the takedowns are not there for Silva. Silva is 0% in her takedown attempts in the UFC. 0%. She's got 2 submission wins by 2 women who took her down and were being kind of risky on the mat, right? Like, Jillian Robertson is known for being a little bit overly aggressive on the mat, and she's been caught a couple of times because of that. And Mara Romero Barella is, you know, and she's not in the UFC anymore. She was, what was she, like 0-4, 0-5 in the UFC or something like that, or 1-5. But like, she, again, reckless on the ground. We're talking about Montana De La Rosa, who's got a wrestling background. She looks really good in the wrestling. And when she gets to the mat on top, she's safe. And I think that that's the most important thing here, is that she just stays safe against people with good submission attacks. And she'll probably be fine here. We saw her dominate people like Nadia Kessler and Rachel Ostovich on the mat. I think she does something similar here against Silva. I wouldn't be surprised to see Silva hit a submission off of her back, but I think more likely we're looking at a 15-minute decision here for De La Rosa as she kind of grinds her out.
Okay, it's good. We're going to have a fun weekend, because we're going to have some picks that are going to differ from one another. So a lot of fun, Dan. Well, as long as I win, it'll be fun. Co-main event should be a fun light heavyweight battle. Nikita Krylov, Magomed Ankalaev. I don't know why I can't speak, but I can't. That's just the way it goes. Guys, I'm a writer, okay? Krylov, 26-7 as a pro, 10 knockouts, 15 submissions, 7-5 in the UFC. He's another guy who's alternated wins and losses over his last 4. He won his last fight, for what that's worth. 2 inches of reach, grappling stats in his favor. He's a very large plus 255 dog. Magomed, 14-1 as a pro, 9 knockouts, 5-1 in the UFC. He's won 5 straight. He lost via submission to Paul Craig to kick things off in the UFC, and then he's won 5 straight since then, minus 315. I'll be going with him in this one despite the large number.
Yeah, I actually don't even mind him at that number. Granted, that's not the type of number I look for when you're looking for value plays, but I think he's probably the easiest person to pick on this card. Krylov is a guy who makes a lot of mistakes, and Ankalaev is a guy who capitalizes on mistakes really well. You know, you mentioned his only loss in his whole pro career is to Paul Craig, and he literally beat Paul Craig for 14 minutes and 59 seconds, right? Like, he was beating the hell out of Paul Craig for 1 second short of 15 minutes and tacked with 1 second to go. He's literally 1 second away from being an undefeated fighter, with some crazy good wins on his record, right? He messed up Ion Cutelaba not once, but twice. And granted, the first one was an early stoppage, but twice. He front-kicked Dolce Lugiambula into a different zip code. Like, the guy is pretty damn impressive. I actually think he's, like, an interesting person to fill sort of that void that was left by some of the wrestlers leaving the light heavyweight division, right? Because he's a great wrestler. No DC left, no John Jones left. Like, he could fill that void and give a lot of people trouble. And one of the people I think he would give a lot of trouble to is Nikita Krylov, who, when he's on his back, seems to be out of ideas most of the time. So I'm going to go with Ankalaev here. I actually think he finishes Krylov as well.
Ankalaev, that's what I was trying to say before, guys. Dan reminded me, oh yeah, that's how his name is pronounced. So yeah, we're both going with him. Yeah, he looks like a very, very good prospect in this division. Which brings us to the main event. It would be a heavyweight fight again, which we whiffed on our heavyweight picks last week. We'll see how we do this week. I know you interviewed Rosenstrike for this week's Top Turtle, right?
And Surreal Gain. Yeah, both of them will be Gain. Both of them will be on later this week, so make sure to tune into that.
Well, Dan can't play favorites then here, so we'll see who he picks. We'll start with Rosenstrike first. Biggie Boy, 11-1 as a pro, 10 knockouts. The one on his record, the loss was a Francis Ngannou knockout. So that's his only loss as a pro, only loss in the UFC. He's 5-1 in the UFC. He almost lost to Alistair Overeem, which we tend to speak about every week, it seems. I think that one really sticks in our craw. But then he hit a Hail Mary and knocked Overeem's lip off his face. So anyhow, he is plus 215 in this one. So this is another 2 weeks in a row, we got heavyweight fights with large odds. As for Cyril Gane, the Frenchman, 7-0 as a pro, 3 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's on the fast track here. He's 4-0 in the UFC. That will be why he's in the fast track. He's 3 inches, has 3 inches of reach on Rosenstrike. 2 years younger, striking and grappling stats in his favor, as is the betting number, -275. I will be taking him, but it's scary going against a guy like Rosenstrike who hits like he hits.
Well, and it looks like we're going to have one more difference to kick out this
card. All right.
I'm going to go with Iggy Boy on this one. I think Jairzinho Rosenstrike is a very live dog in this fight, and for a couple of reasons. If you go back and watch Cyril Gane's fight with Tanner Boser, that's the one that goes back and sticks in my mind as being like, ooh. Because with like a minute and a half to go in the first round, Boser lands a big left hand. And I think if it was somebody other than Tanner Boser, somebody other than some guy, I mean, not for anything, Tanner Boser, not a huge heavyweight. You know, we talked about Chris Daukaus and sort of that limited ceiling he has because he's a little bit on the smaller side. You know, Tanner Boser, kind of a chunkier 240. I think he's getting down to 230 and he's looked a little better since then. But he popped Cyril Gane pretty hard in the face at the end of the first round. He did it again in the early part of the second round. Didn't stun Gane, but it did back him up and make him think like, oh, I probably shouldn't go in there against somebody like Tanner Boser and get hit like that again. It made him think twice. And against Jair Rosenstrike, you don't get a chance to think about that ever again. You get hit in the face once and it's over. And I think that's the difference maker for me here. Is Gane a better kickboxer than Biggie Boy? 150% yes. Is he the better technical fighter if it hits the mat? 100% yes. Does he have the scary, crazy knockout power that Biggie Boy does? Nope. He doesn't at all. And that's the biggest concern to me because this is a 25-minute fight. And I don't think he knocks out Rosenstrike, right? Because the only person who has is Francis Ngannou, kind of rushing forward, real sloppy. And I think Gane is more respectful than that. And I also think that that's probably what cost him in this fight, is that he's just going to be a little bit too respectful. He's not going to go chase him. He's not going to pour it on him. And it really only takes one mistake here in a 25-minute period, as Overeem learned, to lose to Rosenstrike.
Yeah, it's a scary fight to pick. But yeah, I'm going to stick with Gane. But yeah, that was very, very good. Good breakdown, and yeah, I could see other men winning this one. Another, it's been a very interesting couple weeks for heavyweights. Things are definitely turning over in the division. Hopefully, they can keep things moving at the top too, and at the top of the division, and keep things moving here, and get some fresh blood up to the top there. For a division, usually it's just a bunch of old guys battling. It's nice to see some new blood in there. So that does it for this card. Do you have we you talked about you like someone via submission. Who was it you liked via submission as for a prop bet?
I like Thiago Moises by submission.
And
not because I think for sure that he gets it. Like that's not the reason I'm chasing this prop. But like, if you like him already, definitely bet on him, first of all, because at +170, I think that's a steal. But also, in the same sense, like if you're going to put money on him at +170, you might want to like also add a little bit to that bet, maybe like a quarter of what you're already planning on betting, and just sprinkle a little bit of extra on the submission prop too, because I think that's a pretty smart one. I will also say one of the props that I like on this one too is typically we don't look at light heavyweights going the distance, right? Heavyweights and light heavyweights, the props for them going the distance are usually pretty crazy, right? Like you usually get like, you know, -300, the fight ends inside. And I actually think Dustin Jacoby and Maxim Grishin is a great fight to expect it to go to the distance. Because while they're both good kickboxers, they both like to stand and trade, they're also both fairly technical in the way that they do it. And, you know, Jacoby is coming off of leg kicking Justin Ledette and getting him finished. But before that, he's got, you know, a decision win on the Contender Series against Ty Flores, a decision win in another organization, you know, so he's coming off of a couple of decision wins, and Maxim Grishin went the distance a bunch of times with PFL. He went the distance with Martin Tybura. He went the distance with Jordan Johnson twice, actually. He went the distance with Samilio Rama. Like, he's just a guy who kind of goes the distance there too. So for a prop there, that fight going the distance is probably going to be surprisingly high for guys who go the distance fairly often. And I think I like that one.
All right, cool. Now we're going to do something different this week. And since we suck so bad at picking every fight in the card, we're going to have some locks that we guarantee are going to win. Now, how do you, since we don't do any post pre-production whatsoever, how do you want to do this, Dan? Do you want to each of us pick one? You want us to do it like based on units, or what do you think the best way to do our locks?
Let's go with one lock that everybody should play at whatever their okay. most comfortable unit is. So I don't like to throw units out there because maybe that's not my favorite gambling terms, because everybody uses different numbers and different bankrolls and stuff like that. So I would say whatever your most comfortable bet is when you're looking to put down money, who do you like? Let's do one pick each. And I'll cede the first pick to you.
Hey, Rony Barcelos is my pick. Even though the line's going to be ridiculous, he's my lock. We've pretty much broken down that fight as it is. So may not win me a lot of money, but he's my lock pick.
Yeah, and I would say I like that pick. I'm going to go with something that's going to make me a little bit more money. But yes, I like Rony Barcelos, and I would say I like Rony Barcelos as long as that number comes in, I'm going to say south of 400. I would agree with you on that. North of 400. I worry enough on that. But for my lock this week, I'm going to take Alonzo Menifield over William Knight. I know that fight is basically a pick'em fight. I just really trust Alonzo Menifield, his strength of competition versus the strength of competition of William Knight. And also, if we're looking to, you know, for something that's going to make us money on our lock, I think Alonzo Menifield is a good one. Coming in at almost even odds. And the fact that, you know, he's fought people like OSP, and he's fought people like, you know, Devin Clark and Paul Craig. He knocked out Paul Craig. You know, so he's fought some really high level dudes. Whereas like the highest level dude that William Knight has fought, Alexa Kamer, maybe Jamel Jones, like not a ton of dudes who I'm like blown away by. So, you know, I think that combined with what I said before about William Knight being the type who makes mistakes, I like Menifield here for my lock.
Ah, oh, very, very interesting. So that wraps it up for Rozenstruik versus Gain. We'll be back with the breakdown of that, or the review of that, next week, and then we'll be breaking down the massive pay-per-view card, which will be coming up with three title fights and crazy undercard and whatnot, which will be UFC 259. In the meantime, make sure you follow me on Twitter, Jeff Fox Writer, and follow Dan at Gumby Vreeland. Make sure you read all our stuff. Dan writes for sportsgamblingpodcast.com now too, so make sure you check out all our stuff there. Check out Dan's other two podcasts, Top Turtle MMA and Prelim Picker, and read all our stuff at mma-manifesto.com. So I think that's enough orders for me telling you what to do for this week. So I'm not your mom. Come on. So until next week, I bid you farewell. Someday I will come up with a better ending. But for this week, I'll just say farewell and thank you for listening.